This is the Winchester Talking News for Friday the 28th of January 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of January have been edited by Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before reporting it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are Solo Zara and her incredible travels, Balloons land at school near Winchester, and Save Our Skate Park. May we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Solo Zara and her incredible travels. A 19-year-old who studied in Winchester has become the youngest woman to fly solo around the world. Zara Rutherford, who studied at St Swithin's School, landed at Kortrijk-Wegelgem, or airport in Belgium. I apologise to anyone who does know how to pronounce it. She was accompanied by four planes from the Belgian Red Devils aerobatic display team. The teenager, who has both British and Belgian nationality, was greeted by family and friends, who cheered as she arrived in her Shark Ultralight, the world's fastest light sport aircraft. She posed for photos, holding both a Union and a Belgian flag. The plane's spare seat had been removed to accommodate an extra fuel tank and to avoid any questions about another person flying with her. Ms. Rutherford set off in August for the trip, which was aimed at breaking the records for the youngest woman to circumnavigate the globe solo and the youngest person to do so in a microlight aircraft. She previously studied at St Swithin's School in Winchester, Hampshire, and the solo trip was her gap year project before she goes to university, where she plans to study computer science or computer engineering, with a long-term ambition of becoming an astronaut. Prior to her departure, she told the PA news agency, "At first, I was planning to fly around the world as an adventure during my gap year, not realising I could become the youngest woman to do so if I achieved it. I'm hoping to get more girls interested in aviation." Headmistress of St Swithin's, Jane Gandy, said, "Seeing Zara's interview in Germany with just one day to go really brought home to me the magnitude of her achievement. She spoke of fearing for her life on occasion as she negotiated thunderstorms, forest fires, and extreme cold. The route took her through the United Kingdom, Iceland, Greenland, Canada, the United States, and Latin America to Colombia, and then back north via Alaska to Russia, China, Indonesia, India, and the Middle East, before ending in Belgium."
Okay, Noel, let's have the second headline story, please.
Yes, balloons land at school near Winchester. Two pilots made an impromptu landing at Princess Mead School this week and delighted the entire school. As the children watched the balloon get closer overhead, they daydreamed that it would one day land in the ground so they could get a close look. A few minutes later, with permission from the headmaster, Peter Thacker, they not only landed, but then gave an impromptu STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths, lesson to the children. All the teachers allowed the children to enjoy this exciting moment and joined in with asking many questions to the flight crew. Jonathan Greatrix, owner of Atmosphere Hot Air Balloons, told the school, "Thank you for the very warm welcome and the lovely cup of tea. We had as much fun as you." Heidi Lancaster, head of science, said, "It was a fantastic afternoon of spontaneity. The children went back to the classroom eager to learn more about how to make their own hot air balloons and how to fly them." and there are lovely pictures of one of the balloon apparently landing with all the children gathered around waving, and then getting ready to take off, and then there's just one more picture of the balloon actually taking off and going away.
Deborah, let's have the third headline story, please.
And this one is entitled Save Our Skate Park. An explosion of support has greeted a campaign to save the city's skate park. Its users fear the impending disposal of the site by the City Council to Southampton University will lead to its eventual closure. A petition on 38 Degrees website has attracted more than 1,500 names since the weekend. Organiser Stephen Cann called on the council to remove the park from the land disposal. Why would the university want the land with a skate park that they can't do anything with? Mr. Cann of Northanger Drive, Abbots Barton, has a 12-year-old daughter who occasionally uses the park. No one has any idea what is happening. The council has not engaged with the users. People say the skate park is the best in the south. Winchester does not have very good provision for young people. No ice rink, bowling, trampoline park, a cinema that is not designed for teenagers. On Tuesday, the council cabinet rescinded plans to transfer the River Park Leisure Centre site to Southampton University. It followed a legal challenge from the Friends of River Park about the lack of consultation before the decision to grant the 150-year lease was made on November the 23rd. The council has admitted it got it wrong and has now advertised the proposed disposal of ownership of the skate park and indoor bowls club in public notices in the Hampshire Chronicle. The cabinet heard that on legal advice, the legal requirements do not cover the River Park Leisure Centre. The land on which the city's redundant leisure centre sits on is deemed not to be open public space. A fresh decision on the disposal is due in March. The ruling Liberal Democrat group came under fire from the opposition Tories. Conservative group leader Caroline Horrell said, "From 1902, the recreation ground, including the area of the redundant leisure centre, the indoor bowling club and skate park, has belonged to the residents of Winchester. Before deciding to dispose of the site, the council was obliged to publicise its intention to dispose of any parts of the site which are open space and to consider any objections as set out in the Local Government Act of 1972. While it seems there is support for the River Park vision, which the University of Southampton presented, it is not clear whether this proposal was the best or only option for our residents and our district. We don't know if there were other bids or if others have been rejected. The current Liberal administration has singularly failed to consult regarding the future of the site, and so residents are rightly extremely concerned about what will happen to their community facilities. This is not just a legal matter. It is about hearing the voices of the electorate. An open and transparent approach is needed. Residents and councillors should have the opportunity to have their voices heard before any future River Park decision is made." Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Minister for Housing, Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "I am grateful to the author of the letters, Friends of River Park, for drawing this to our attention. I'm disappointed this step was not included in the original paper for decision." She said the council had taken legal advice from a QC and the public notice did not need to include the River Park Leisure Centre. The council would consider any objections to the transfer after the deadline of February the 4th. Councillor Learney addressed Tory criticism and said, "We are following what was agreed by the previous administration, which was Conservative." Skateboarders have defended the skate park as their second home. John Fury, 17, from Salisbury, said, "It's a community. Everyone here are mates. We're from Salisbury and we come here to skate because it's a nice park and it's got good people." Jacob Pike, 17, who studies digital media and photography, said, "I've met most of my mates from skating. It keeps us out of trouble, and if ever we're in town skating, we always get kicked out of spots, so it's the only place we can go." Mick Lushkinoff, 18, studying graphic design, said, "This is our second home. If I didn't skate, I'd be so bored, I don't know what I'd do." The three local Lib Dem councillors for St Bartholomew's ward, in a social media message, said, "However, the inclusion of the skate park and the indoor bowls club does not mean that these facilities will be lost. Under the lease, the university will be required to maintain both facilities." The university has said publicly that they're very keen to improve and enhance the skate park, and they'll be seeking to involve users in this process. Under the lease, the skate park will remain a community asset, accessible by all. The lease also explicitly requires the university to provide alternative facilities for the indoor bowls club if the current building use is changed.
And that concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, and then we'll go on to the first person, letter from Westminster, Bulgarum diary, and finish with editorial comment. And at the end of all that, we'll go on to items for general news. Let's start with Heather with the death notices.
Buckingham. Mike Buckingham died peacefully at home on Saturday, the 15th of January, aged 77. Dekicho, Shirley Dekicho, passed away the 10th of January, 2022, aged 78. Edmund, Miriam Janet Edmund, passed away peacefully on the 11th of January with her family around her, aged 61 years. Keenan, Joyce Mary Keenan, passed away peacefully on the 14th of January, aged 100 years. Pollock, Bill Pollock, passed away peacefully at Tegfield House Care Home on Sunday the 2nd of January, aged 86 years. Sainsbury, John Devan Sainsbury, Lord Sainsbury of Preston Candover, KG, died peacefully in his sleep at home after a long illness on the 14th of January, aged 94.
Noel's got a Christian comment.
Yes, it's from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is rector of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester, and his title is A Time to Reset. The early days of February in 1952 were a turning point for our nation. Saddened by the death of the king, it was also a moment to look forward in hope as a young queen acceded to the throne. What a reign Her Majesty's has been, and how our nation has been blessed in her years so far. She has set an example in service and steadfastness, in courage and compassion. There will rightly be a whole year of celebrations. In many churches, including here at St Cross, these begin with the traditional marking of the day of accession on February the 6th. The climax will come in early June as the nation rejoices and remembers. This is also a time to reflect on more recent events over the last 2 years. None of us could have expected, when we planned our spring and summer activities in early 2020, how much and how quickly COVID-19 would change our day-to-day lives. Nor could we have imagined the price it would impose in lives lost, health impaired, and enjoyments foregone. The idea that it would be over by Christmas or by summer in 2020 or even 2021 proved an illusion. We have learned the need for patience. Nonetheless, we find the Omicron wave receding and a period without onerous restrictions stretching ahead. The excitements of Christmas and Epiphany season are behind us, and Lent is not yet begun. So we have the chance to refresh ourselves and to reset. How will we live now? What have we learned? Many of us have come to a new understanding of the importance of community life of extended family relationships and of relationships of mutual support between households. Many of us feel more committed than ever to staying true to our deepest values, those beliefs and practices which bring us light and comfort in times of darkness and distress. Christians have been reminded of our reliance on the regular rhythms of church life in which we rejoice, our prayers, our reading and learning, what it means to follow Christ, our gatherings and songs of praise. Some of us have even experienced a growth in faith and new levels of understanding as we have been sustained by these rhythms in the face of unprecedented challenges. I commend to you the chance to take up new activities or return to ones you enjoyed in the past, once it is safe to do so. In these pages, week by week, there is always information about groups and events, both secular and religious, to consider joining. By gathering with others, when we can, we encourage them and gain encouragement ourselves. Jesus says he comes to us that we might have life in all its fullness. He invites us to explore the ways we wish to live now and into the future, so that we each find the life to which we are called. Let us pray for grace to use well the days God gives us in this world, that we may know his newness and fullness of life as we ease the burdens of the heavy laden and offer him praise and worship him in spirit and in truth.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 7 letters this week. We'll start with one read by Deborah.
And the first one comes from Charles Lidbury, and he calls it Bishop's Salary. Sir, in the latter part of 2021, it was announced that Bishop Tim was standing down from his position, and subsequently that he would retire in February 2022. We now learn that the formal process of appointing a successor is anticipated to begin towards the end of 2022. It would be interesting to know why on earth the process was not started when Bishop Tim's retirement date was agreed. It would certainly save 2 or 3 years of a bishop's salary, but it puts a heavy burden on the senior team of the diocese, who will have to run things without a bishop. Charles Lidbury, Derngate Terrace, Winchester.
Heartfelt tribute. This is written by Jenny Bland. Sir, your readers will have heard that Lord Sainsbury of Preston Candover died last week, aged 94. The national papers have recorded his many achievements. He was the hugely successful chairman of the family business during the years when it was the indisputable leader in the supermarket field, and he was involved in many other important national enterprises. However, few may realise how crucial the Sainsbury's help was for the rescue and restoration of the Theatre Royal in Winchester during the 1970s. When a group of us were desperate to prevent the demolition of the theatre and to restore it to its former glory, I wrote to Lord Sainsbury, explaining our problems and asking if he could help us to launch an appeal for its purchase. The next day, I received a cheque for £5,000 to get things going, and an encouraging note saying how important it was to save the threatened regional theatres. He asked to be kept in touch with our progress. We got the theatre listed and started to raise the funds towards its purchase for £35,000. John Sainsbury gave us £15,000 towards this, and later in the campaign he gave us a further £100,000. Most crucial of all, in the last stages of the restoration, he and Lady Sainsbury came to our rescue. Our builder had gone bust, and work stopped completely only 4 months before we were to have our grand reopening, a potential disaster. We were forced to accept a much higher estimate to get the work finished on time, and we were £80,000 short of the necessary funding, although we were confident we could raise it. Understandably, the builders were not happy with promises. However, when I explained our problem to the Sainsbury's, they offered to guarantee the full sum, and all was well. We opened on time. Of course, over the years, there have been many other very generous donors to the Theatre Royal's restoration programme. But John and Anya Sainsbury were absolutely crucial to its survival. Winchester owes them both real gratitude for their far-sighted, generous and always enthusiastic support. Jenny Enfield Bland, Firle, Lewis, East Sussex.
And Terry Gould writes that it's time for a plan, sir. How does our city council manage to get it so wrong so often? We know it is understaffed, its expertise is scarce, and many councillors do not seem to have the necessary vision or even some relevant experience. Yes, Winchester is bombarded with development proposals, Central Winchester Regeneration, Station Approach, River Park, Sir John Moore Barracks eventually, the Voltex site, the, in my opinion, mad diversion of Andover Road. The Romans laid out their roads in straight lines for a reason. The district-wide transportation review, plus a review update of the local plan. As a way through this welter, the council has tried the Basingstoke approach and has hired London estate agents, JLL, who seem to be overcomplicating and deepening the mire we're in. Certainly for the 300 to 400 residents and ratepayers who worked with the architect planner from firm JTP to produce the supplementary planning document, SPD, it would seem logical to try a different approach. Is it not time to think of a community plan for Winchester to knit together the many areas for possible development? This community plan approach would bring together a wider body of expertise, of which the council would only be a part, not the whole. Winchester does need and deserve a much better approach to plan for its future. Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Simon Lever on the subject of the skate park. Sir, I have the impression that Winchester City Council has already verbally agreed to proceed with the 150-year lease term with the University of Southampton, and then to sell the idea to residents and those who would potentially be against such a decision. Lack of transparency, together with legal costs, delays and uncertainty, is having a negative impact, creating distrust in Winchester City Council, which is supposed to be working for the Winchester community. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, and it's accompanied by a photograph of John Fury twirling about on his skateboard.
Hoarding money. Robin Atkins writes, Sir, a letter signed by 10 Alresford electors was delivered to the returning officer at 10:45 a.m. on January the 21st, calling for a by-election following the resignation of Councillor Jay Jones earlier this month. Jay himself was co-opted some 2 years ago. The signatures to the letter believe that the Alresford electorate should decide who represents them, rather than the town council, who tend to co-opt their friends rather than the best independent candidate. The by-election, according to Winchester City Council, will be before early March 2022. The main area of contention is the proposed rise in the 2022-3 precept by 3% to £336,694. Two councillors of integrity, named Councillor Sprott and Dival, voted against this increase on February the 14th at the last New Alresford Town Council meeting. They believe that there is sufficient money already in the bank accounts reserves to cover any increase. At November the 30th, the New Alresford Town Council had £550,000 in their bank accounts, with reserves at £525,000. Of these reserves, there are earmarked reserves of £185,000 to cover future projects, and free reserves of £340,000. I raised the subject of the future precept 2022-3 in early December 2021, and having been refused all relevant documents, finally was given some of them on January the 11th, 2022. Further queries remain unanswered, and the schedule produced by them yesterday is plainly inaccurate. I expect the candidates for the by-election to cover this important matter. The precept is public money being raised, and all New Oldsford Town Council councillors, not just two of them, should realise that we are all suffering a cost of living problem, and that the Town Council needs to have regard to this factor. Hoarding money in their bank accounts is not right. There is no need for any increase in the precept at all. Robin Atkins, FCA, Lindley Gardens, Oldsford.
And Martin Holmes writes about a key principle. Sir, I agree with Councillor Lumby that it is fundamental that Winchester City Council ensures it gets its procedures right. Chronicle Letters, January the 20th. This principle should apply to all public sector organisations, central and local. Transparency will also bolster accountability and respect for our political representatives. I am, however, concerned that Mr. Lumby is unnecessarily partisan in his criticism, which is directed only at the current administration. Unlike Mr. Lumby, I have no political affiliation and I'm not engaged in organised political activity. But I do think that for the sake of balance, your readers should be reminded again that it was the actions of the previous Conservative administration that resulted in the first of the spate of actions for judicial review back in 2015. Mr. Lumby was not a member of the council then. As for the station approach scheme, my memory is that there were concerns about consultation when it was launched by the previous administration. I, for one, was never convinced by the case put forward in support, especially the assessment of the demand for office space in Winchester and degree of risk involved, letters April 2020. The future of the Central Winchester Regeneration Project is again the subject of controversy, but there ought to be scope to develop a way forward at River Park. As I understand it, the Council's position is that the footprint of the old leisure centre effectively excluded public access so to that area of the site. If that is the case, future development of that precise plot could go ahead without infringing public access to the rest of River Park, subject to consultation and normal planning rules. As a council taxpayer, I can see advantage in the council securing a commercial rent on the land and the lessee bearing the cost of demolishing the redundant building. It was a failure of the previous administration not to have planned for that when it decided to build the new leisure centre. And the outdoor swimming fraternity might seek financial support from the developer for a Lido for which the council might provide a site. Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
The next letter is from Dorothy Jones, Simple Pleasures. Sir, I write in opposition to John Lowry's letter of January the 6th about River Park. John was employed at the University of Southampton for many years in administrative roles, and although we are of the same generation, our views clash on any further incursion of University of Southampton into Winchester. I was employed by Winchester School of Art for 23 years and had warned when the merger of the institutions was mooted that we didn't fit the mould. A research-led modern university embrace an art school so old. Winchester School of Art had a highly successful foundation course in art and design that not only attracted applicants from local sixth form colleges and those further afield, but also enabled mature candidates to access pathways into BA courses. Our two first floor purpose-built studios on West Parkside Park Avenue were purloined to accommodate former ground floor services after the Itchen burst its banks, and the foundation department was relocated to temporary accommodation at New College, the Avenue, Southampton, with assurances that it would ultimately return to Winchester. However, Those assurances were jettisoned in the second academic year at New College, and as a consequence I took early retirement in 2002. The subsequent loss of the Textile Conservation Centre was, in my view, a further blot on the University of Southampton's copybook. Winchester's loss became Glasgow's university gain. As a lifelong Wintonian, I'd love to see similar, simple leisure facilities to those I remember of old. The paddling pool fed from the stream adjacent to St Bede's, and the rowing boats on the Itchen. The high water table is not conducive to any further development, and the uncertainty of changing climatic conditions should be a deterrent to any activities that should prejudice the future well-being of local residents. When I waded in my wellies to access West Side to retrieve early UCAS applications for posting to meet the deadline, I appreciated the forethought that had gone into the architect's design of the raised steps to entrances of the adjacent cottages in Park Avenue. In my opinion, University of Southampton should content itself with its current vacant holdings and keep its hands off River Park. Dorothy Jones, Charles Close, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
And that concludes all of the letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all of the contributors. Now, this week's first person is by Joanna Lewis, and Heather's going to read it.
Joanna Lewis writes, "Obsessed BBC goes round in circles. Spare us from the BBC. The Beige Broadcasting Corporation is trying to move into local news reporting in its search for relevance to justify the licence fee. The Beeb is brilliant on natural history, drama and children's television, but its political journalism is 50 shades of bland. Take last week on BBC Radio 4. One of its stalwart morning presenters barely tickled Chris Bryant on the issue of government blackmail and intimidation. So obsessed has the Beeb been with Partygate, it goes round in circles on the same story. This means other major stories barely get covered. In early January, where was decent coverage of the crime and policing bill that will strip people of civil liberties and outlaw protesting against issues like climate change? I was sickened by the way the regional BBC News briefly and blithely covered the latest scandal about water companies pouring sewage into our rivers. I hardly think Sir David would approve. It registers in importance just above the routine feel-good story. Maybe it's a cat that's learnt to play the violin or a dog that barks in Urdu. Coverage is superficial at best, pure PR for corporates at worst. Also, the BBC's online journalism is so badly written. It's an odd mix of sloppy writing and antiquated phrases. Weird gibberish fills lots of events, pointlessly jammed into single sentences. It's computer-generated text? Or are they just lazy? No wonder there's a Bring Back News to the UK organisation. Set up following a petition to the BBC in 2014 calling for proper coverage of controversial issues. Whatever your views, everyone can agree surely we need a state-supported broadcaster that can deepen public knowledge about complex issues, present a range of alternatives. Instead, it keeps to narrow debates, repeats entrenched well-known positions and panders to powerful interest groups. But we understand too well in Winchester that on the last point, as the saying goes, Houston, we have a problem. Because of flouting planning and procurement laws, the council has had more judicial reviews than Boris Johnson's had lockdown parties. Led by megalomaniac councillors and an ex-Basingstoke chumocracy of puffball executives, much taxpayer money and many public assets are being squandered and sold off. The determination to hand Silver Hill to a single developer against all sense, just to prove their original 2010 decision was right and the public was wrong, is an insult to the city and its people. There's still no major plan, nor developer control switch. Imagine local BBC News androids trying to cover this saga, or even wanting to. Their heads would explode. According to its own charter, the BBC is not supposed to cannibalise local independent news coverage. This risks undermining grassroots channels of accountability and diluting public opinion, and this is absolutely not what we need now. Would the BBC track and trace the council's dodgy dealings at River Park, for example? A legally designated open space since 1902 for use by the public. It belongs to the residents of Winchester. Yet this council believes it can give it away to whoever it wants. It's daylight robbery. You have until 4 p.m. on February the 4th to register objections to the selling off of River Park. But you can do that by emailing Catherine Knight at cknight@winchester.gov.uk. You won't find that on the BBC.
And now we hope to hear what's going on in Parliament, because Noel has got a letter from Westminster.
Yes, and it's a letter from Steve Brine, Winchester MP. Readers of the Hampshire Chronicle will know I have been pressing since the launch of the Get Boosted Now campaign to bring some walk-in capacity to Winchester. This is to supplement the good work our local GP surgeries and others are doing to get us fully vaccinated in places which are easy to access. I was really pleased, therefore, when we managed to bring these online earlier this month, and pop-ups at Badger Farm and Park and Ride South site near Junction 11 reported brisk business. I am now trying to encourage ministers to look further ahead. As we transition COVID from pandemic to endemic, like influenza, we have to consider what an ongoing vaccination programme looks like in practice. Our primary care networks have pulled out all the stops and given us one of the most open economies in the world as a result, but they cannot operate on this war footing indefinitely. The government's promised long-term learning to live with COVID plan needs to outline how we will do just that, including how we might potentially vaccine large parts of the population ongoing. This is about workforce, yes, but it's also about practical considerations right down to where the jabs will take place. Our GP surgeries don't always have the capacity, and when it comes to children, our schools certainly don't. They're centres of education, not medical facilities. As I said in the Commons during a recent speech, the new National Institute for Health Protection needs to bring forward plans in this respect. Another practical issue, which I raised in the Commons last week with the Prime Minister, is opening up travel in a fair and equitable way. We had great news this week with the announcement that day two tests for the fully vaccinated entering or returning to the UK will be scrapped. This brings international travel towards near normality and is one of the last things our government can do to aid that, much else resting with the entry requirements still required by countries including France and Spain. But for teenagers maybe wishing to travel with their families this half term or at Easter, there are issues proving vaccination status via the digital NHS pass as everyone else can. So it's welcome that from the start of February 12th, 12 to 15-year-olds in England will be able to prove their vaccination status for international outbound travel. The system is not, however, able to provide proof of one jab and a recent infection, and that is a problem which government needs to address urgently. My view is that we now largely have a pandemic of the unvaccinated, but must remember that not everyone in this category is vaccine hesitant or refuses. There is still a number of people who cannot have their next vaccination because of a recent COVID infection, and there are, of course, those who are unable to take the vaccine in its current form because of an existing health condition. That long-term plan, which must also set out how we will act when the next variant comes along, should be clear how we will support the unvaccinated to do the right thing for themselves and the common good.
Let's look at some alternative news now, because Deborah's got Belgarum Diary.
What is the future for the unique city storefront? The future of former Debenhams department store on Winchester High Street is uncertain. It closed last year as the national chain finally collapsed after ailing for years. The building's owned by an offshoot company of Surrey County Council and has been in discussions with several interested parties. Travelodge is said to be considering expanding its present hotel, although the company has not responded to the Hampshire Chronicle request for clarification. One thing that Belgarum needs to highlight is the future of the facade. The intricate glass and metalwork dates from when the store was owned by Sheriff and Ward and looks to be pre-World War II, although someone may know better. Whatever the future holds, the shop front should be protected. Many modern-day stores want to sweep away the past in the name of their brand. But in a city like Winchester, with scores of historic shop fronts, such things should be resisted, thinks Belgarum. Perhaps you disagree. And there are photographs of the Debenhams store, and I have to say I'd never noticed it, but above the shop, the big plate glass shop windows, there's a long strip of very attractive metalwork surrounding windows, and also beside the doors there's another very interesting piece of metalwork decoration.
Editorial comment time. Oh, so it's over to Heather.
The city is a melting pot that needs protecting. There are many different community groups and societies that make living in Winchester a nicer place. Whether that's the Winchester Litter Pickers, or the Winchester Dramatic Society, or the City of Winchester Trust, or the Winchester Art Club, living in a city is like being in one big melting pot. It's how these groups and societies, who may be differing in likes, dislikes and needs, rub along that makes a place. Now, with one of these communities at threat, the Hampshire Chronicle is proud to give a voice to all those who regularly use the skate park at River Park, as its future hangs in the balance. Yes, the council has a responsibility to make the city great and to do the best for taxpayers, but it also has a responsibility to make sure nobody is sidelined, ignored, or pushed out. Now, the people using the skateboard and its fantastic concrete bowl may not be regulars in the democratic process or familiar faces at the City Hall or at business groups, but that doesn't mean they should be ignored. That facility is an asset to the city, and it adds to the glorious array of different interests that make this city a thriving hub of culture.
I've got a little announcement from Terry Smith at Open Site here. The Open Site Drop-In Information Hub in Winchester is open for anyone living with or connected to someone with sight loss to speak to a member of the Open Site team about anything related to visual impairment, including aids, equipment, benefits, daily living challenges and much more. The Hub is held on each third Monday in the month at Winchester Discovery Centre from 10 o'clock in the morning until midday. No appointment is needed, and all advice is provided without charge. Open Sight's recently appointed Benefits Assistant Officer, Sharon Fleury, is on hand to assist anyone who has been registered as visually impaired, that means sight impaired or severely sight impaired, to claim statutory benefits to which they are entitled, such as attendance allowance, that's AA, and personal independence payment, PIP. The application forms are not easy to complete correctly, so contact Sharon to help you on 023 8064 6372. I'll say that again. 023 8064 6372. Sharon will come to you at home to fill out the form. There's no charge for this service. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 28th of January at 7:49 a.m. and it begins at 4:49 p.m. and on Wednesday the 2nd of February it ends at 7:42 a.m. and begins at 4:58 p.m. Now we're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, the headline is High Profile Cases Make Referrals Spike. Number of children referred social workers spikes every time there is a high-profile case, a new report has revealed. Figures published by Hampshire County Council show a 21% increase in the number of children in social care from 2016 to 2021. Last year, the deaths of Star Hobson and Arthur Lebinjo Hughes made national headlines as court hearings found that both children were subjected to abhorrent abuse by their parents. County Council bosses say that every time incidents like this happen, the number of children referred to the council increases. At the same time, the COVID-19 pandemic has had the opposite effect. Steve Crocker, Director of Children's Services, said, "When there are high-profile cases like Arthur Lebinjo Hughes, people make more phone calls to the social care team. That's obviously better than not hearing about these things at all. But it's hard to separate the rise in referrals due to high-profile cases from the decrease due to COVID-19. Family members and teachers have seen less of these children in the past 2 years, so that's had a knock-on effect. It goes to show that we must keep pushing forward, always striving to do better." The report was presented to the County Council's Children and Young People's Select Committee in Winchester. It came as part of a revenue report for Children's Services, a department set to lose £21.3 million as part of ongoing budget cuts. As part of these proposals, child social care funding could be slashed by £7.7 million. However, Mr. Crocker insisted that money is never on the minds of social care workers. "They don't go out with the financial situation playing on their mind," he said. "Instead, their job is simply to make the right call for the child they see in front of them. That's all we're interested in." With cases like Star Hobson and Baby P, there was a lot of public anger, and justifiably so, but the people responsible for their deaths have been tried and convicted. The people who tried to help, even if they made mistakes, are not responsible for the deaths. No police officer or social worker goes out to do a bad job. They go out with the information they have available, and while there are lessons to be learned, social care is an incredibly complex field.
I've got a review of The Smeds and the Smooze. Families were treated to an extraterrestrial tale with a compelling moral story as The Smeds and the Smooze came to the Theatre Royal Winchester. The play, produced by Tall Stories, takes on the book of the same name, written by Julia Donaldson and illustrated by Axel Scheffler. Most parents will be familiar with their work, the most famous being The Gruffalo, and its follow-up, The Gruffalo's Child, or any one of Donaldson's hundreds of books, such as The Highway Rat, Zog, Superworm, The Snail and the Whale. The list goes on and on. For Donaldson and Scheffler's work is not only prolific, making them the United Kingdom's number one picture book pair, it also captures the imagination of children. Their combination is one that enchants and also lends itself to adaptation for the small screen and the stage. The Smeds and the Smooze is one of their later works, only published in 2018. It won the British Book Award in 2020, and it has a bit more of a complicated story to it than some of their more traditional books. I think Romeo and Juliet, but set in space, with colourful characters, zany worlds, and a powerful lesson of racial harmony. The characters are brought to life by Dan Armstrong, who plays Bill, and Althea Bury, who plays Janet, the star-crossed lovers, and their grandparents, Tim Hibbard and Angela Laverick, who both offer opposing views to the other side. All the actors are warmly received by their audience, and the show, all 58 minutes of it, goes down a treat. You'll be guaranteed to walk out singing "That's Why You Should Never Play With a Smoo" or any number of catchy songs. If you've ever enjoyed the book, then this play is a surefire hit. I wouldn't be surprised to see the story follow in the likes of some of its more well-known counterparts and make it onto our televisions at Christmas. As ever, the Theatre Royal Winchester provides a perfect place for a family outing, an excellently refurbished venue. The Smeds and the Smooze will be returning to Hampshire on February from the 12th to the 13th, when it will be appearing at MAST, Mayflower Studios, Southampton.
Marwell Zoo's annual stocktake of animals. Thousands of animals, from stick insects to white rhinos, are being tallied up for the annual stock take at Marwell Zoo. Keepers at the Hampshire Conservation Charity are required by law each year to complete an audit of the 2,500 mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, fish and invertebrates in their care. And there's a charming picture of a young woman who is clearly one of the keepers, clutching her forms to be filled in and surrounded by otters. Species such as Caribbean giant cockroaches and stick insects are counted in groups, but all others are recorded individually. Among the latest arrivals to be included in the count is 4-year-old white rhino Zara, which was born as part of an endangered species breeding program and has joined the zoo's crash of rhinos Kiri, Sula, Pembe and Yahari. A zoo spokesman said, "It is hoped one day she may mother calves to secure the future of the species. Southern white rhinos were previously hunted to near extinction, leaving only approximately 20 to 50 individuals at the end of the 19th century. Other recent additions include a third endangered Banten calf, born on Saturday and joining two youngsters born in December. Banten, which are a new species for Marwell, are found throughout Southeast Asia, including Cambodia, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand and Vietnam. Other arrivals since the last stocktake include Palmer wallabies, the smallest species of the Macropus family, coppery titi monkeys, a male Linus two-toed sloth, a Humboldt penguin chick, a bearded emperor tamarin, a male tapir, and Red River hogs. Debbie Pearson, I think she's probably the person in the picture, as she's the animal registrar, said, "Every year we complete the audit in accordance with zoo legislation to ensure the numbers we have on record tally with the animals we have on the ground before sending the final figures to our local authority. This year we have more than 2,500 different animals across 141 different species. It's been an exciting year with some welcome additions to the breeding programmes and some firsts for Marwell." The zoo spokeswoman added, "Although the audit is undertaken once a year, keepers continually count the zoo's animals, the record of which is published at the end of January. The annual inventory is shared around the world via a database designed to ensure the best possible management of worldwide conservation breeding programmes. The zoo, set in 140 acres of parkland near Colden Common, was founded by a businessman, the late Dr. John Knowles, and opened in 1972. It has developed an international reputation for its conservation work, with species such as the Mongolian wild horse and snow leopard."
Epic journey to Winchester vets raises money for charity. A dog lover has completed a mammoth 115-mile trek to mark the anniversary of his pet's death at a Winchester vet and to raise awareness of Alabama rot. Danny Watts braved wind, rain, hail and sleet to complete the epic run and walk in memory of his 4-year-old Red Fox Labrador Rocco, who died last January after contracting cutaneous and renal globular vasculopathy, more commonly known as Alabama rot. The feat of endurance took Danny 35 hours to complete, and his original 110-mile route was extended due to the adverse weather, which turned fields into mud baths and forced the personal trainer to take a more circuitous route. After setting off, Danny and his support team arrived at Anderson Moore's veterinary specialists in Winchester, replicating the final journey Rocco made a year earlier at almost 8 p.m. the next day. Danny said, "It was a real challenge, made even tougher by the weather, which threw everything at us. We had planned everything incredibly well, but the one thing you can't control is the weather. I was feeling good, and the first marathon distance went with no problems. Then, around halfway through the second marathon distance, the heavens opened, and I was having to change my clothes every couple of hours and was knee-deep in mud in places. That obviously brought a lot of challenges and slowed me down incredibly. It then became less about finishing in a certain time and all about just making sure we finished. Despite issues brought about by the weather, Danny had a chance to stop in the New Forest to take a moment's reflection at the same time, a year ago to the day, he received the phone call from Anderson Moores informing him that there was no more they could do for Rocco. Danny, who has so far raised almost £2,500 for the Alabama Rot Research Fund, said, "I am obviously really happy to raise so much money towards research into Alabama rot, but one of my main aims was to raise awareness of the condition." And this is accompanied by two pictures, Danny with Anderson Moore's director David Waugh shaking hands on his having completed his journey. And then there's a picture of Danny with Rocco, who's a lovely looking dog, and they're running along. He's got a great smile on his face, and I think the dog is smiling too. But that sadly, the dog is no more.
New staff start at Winchester Church Service. A new priest and four new pastoral visitors were welcomed at a special double commissioning service at St Paul's, Winchester, on January the 16th. At the refurbished church, the Right Reverend David Williams, Bishop of Basingstoke, licensed Professor Reverend Professor Liz Stewart as a self-supporting associate priest following completion of her training curacy in the parish. For the past 9 months, Liz's day job has been running the University of Winchester as Vice-Chancellor, but she's now reverted to the post of First Deputy Vice-Chancellor. Liz said, "I thank God every day that he sent me to this parish. I read something this week that said how easy it would be to love everybody if we but knew their stories. Well, we do know their stories. We know that everybody is a beloved child of God. We lay hold to this. We celebrate it." Reverend Mary Copping, assistant priest and children's and youth work coordinator in the parish, said, "I'm so pleased that Liz has joined our parish and will continue to be with us. She is a joy to work with. It is also really great that we have these new parish visitors. Such an achievement." A programme of home visiting by trained volunteers has for many years been run by the parish of St Matthew with St Paul, providing social support for those in need from both the church and the wider community. Welcoming the new parish visitors brings the team up to a total of 18 active members. Bishop David said, as he commissioned the new contingent, "Your service is a pastoral one, especially to the unwell, the frail, the bereaved, the lonely and the troubled. I encourage you to see them with Christ's eyes of love." They have been well prepared by a training course at St Paul's, coordinated by Jan Wally in conjunction with the St John's charity, and colleagues from two local benefices. Jan said the course covered lone working and active listening. Outside speakers discussed dementia, end-of-life issues, mental health and bereavement. It was particularly helpful to participate with colleagues, sharing best practice and learning from each other.
Record recycling levels. Recycling rates in Winchester have reached record levels, with the district seeing the highest growth in Hampshire. National waste and recycling figures released last month showed that recycling has increased in the City Council area to 40.5%, up 2.4% on the previous year, which is 2019-20. Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, Councillor Martin Todd, said, "Winchester City Council has also moved to be the best performing authority across Hampshire, Southampton and Portsmouth for residual waste production, that's black bag waste, moving ahead of Eastleigh to the top position in Hampshire for the first time in this most important statistic. The highest annual tonnage of green waste was also collected in 2020-21 at 6,600 tonnes. Councillor Todd added, "Well, the main reason for these improvements are the first whole year with glass collection, the introduction of an improved and more effective garden waste collection service, and the continuation of all our services during COVID, when some other local authorities paused or stopped some of their services, and also the introduction of battery collections.
MP warned by watchdog. Not all former government ministers are sufficiently clear on the standards of behaviour, rules and legislation they are bound by after leaving top jobs, an anti-corruption watchdog has warned. Lord Pickles, chairman of the Advisory Committee on Business Appointments, ACOBA, has said he is increasingly concerned about the behaviour after former Health Minister Steve Brine failed to seek advice on an outside role until after he had taken up the job in a breach of the rules. Mr. Brine, who was paid £19,992 a year for 96 hours of work by Sycamore, a pharmaceutical company, then asked Nadeem Sahawi, who was then Vaccines Minister, to take part in a webinar in February 2021, organised by the firm and hosted by Mr. Brine, letters released on Monday showed. In the documents, Mr. Brine said Mr. Sahawi had been aware the event was being hosted by him when the minister agreed to attend. Former Health Secretary Matt Hancock also took part in one of the webinars hosted by Mr. Brine in June 2021. Lord Pickles said that while he had no doubt Mr. Brine believed contacting the government on Sigma's behalf was appropriate, he had reasonable concern that he was only able to make direct engagement with Mr. Sahawi because of his former government job. He said, "I do not consider it was in keeping with the letter or spirit of the government's rules for a former minister at Department of Health and Social Security to contact a minister with responsibility for health on behalf of a pharmaceutical company which pays him." Mm. Winchester Conservative MP Mr. Brine, in correspondence with ACOBA, admitted he had made a mistake by a few weeks in not consulting the body before taking up the job, and said he could only apologise again for poor admin on my part. He said his interests were properly registered and that no lobbying on behalf of Sigma took place. But Lord Pickles said these were different rules and that it is a former minister's personal responsibility to understand which guidelines they must abide by. Mr. Brine said, "More widely, I feel it's important to point out that any attempt in the media designed to smear members of Parliament, demean the entire political process and the reputation of decent people. At all times I have acted with respect for the, albeit often complex, rules that rightly exist to regulate any outside interests we have." Mr. Brine, who was a health minister between 2017 and 2019, added that his role with Sigma ended in November 2021. But in a letter to Cabinet Office Minister Steve Barclay, Lord Pickles said he was growing increasingly concerned that not all former ministers of the Crown are sufficiently clear on the various standards of behaviour, rules and legislation that are incumbent on them. Labour Deputy Leader Angela Rayner said, "From the revolving door to crony contracts, the scandals just keep mounting for a Conservative Party mired in sleaze from the Prime Minister down. Even the government's in-house committee is increasingly concerned about the behaviour of former Tory ministers." In a later statement, Mr. Brine said, "At the onset of the biggest vaccination programme in our history, I wanted to give the vaccine minister a chance to thank a vital part of the workforce, but I understand the event has caused concern and as such accept entirely ACOBA's decision."
Your chance to nominate an independent business. Winchester City Council is calling on residents to support their favourite local businesses ahead of Love Local Day on 14th of February, in partnership with shopappy.com. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, independent businesses have been a lifeline for many, offering home deliveries and online events. Now it's your chance to recognise them. To make sure your favourite local business is in with a chance of winning, nominate them at shopappy.com/lovelocalday2022 before February the 12th. On February the 14th, Love Local Day, the businesses with the most local nominations will receive a gift from shopappy.com on behalf of the community. Love Local Day is a national campaign recognising the important role local businesses play. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, We're delighted to collaborate with Shop Happy for Love Local Day, as it will give us all an opportunity to support independent businesses that provide convenient services locally.
National Park raises concerns over work, and there is a picture of a rather complicated road junction. It's the proposed M3 Junction 9 at Winnall. A National Park authority has raised concerns about the impact of a planned £175 million scheme at Junction 9 of the M3. The South Downs National Park has objected to the plans which are being organised by National Highways. The work, which is due to start next year, will change the layout of the Winnall roundabout. It will cost between £125 and £175 million and has a start date of 2023 to 2024. The work includes widening the junction to create four lanes each way and new road and roundabout designs to provide free flow links between the M3 and A34 for those travelling between Newbury and Southampton. Following the latest consultation, a spokesman from National Highways said, "Well, following feedback, in consultation with the South Downs National Park, the project team have changed some landscaping to the east of the M3. They've also refined the design to benefit walkers, cyclists and horse riders." A statement from the South Downs National Park Authority said, "Well, the authority recognises the need for improvements at this strategically important junction. However, we've issued an objection to the proposal based on the scheme as currently presented. This is based on potential adverse impacts to the South Downs National Park's landscape, biodiversity and recreational opportunities, together with inadequate mitigation measures as they currently stand. It is vital that opportunities are taken to enhance the landscape and increase connectivity between the city and the South Downs and communities along the River Itchen. As part of the development consent order process, we are working with National Highways to address our concerns. We welcome the recent announcement that removes the soil deposition areas, but much more is needed from this major scheme. Discussions are also ongoing to create a new walking and cycling route within the national park."
Spooky occurrences at Winchester Pub. The boss of an historic Winchester pub has spoken of the spooky happenings at the venue that he has experienced since taking over. The Eclipse Inn is known for its cosy atmosphere, great food and friendly staff. But the pub also holds great mysteries among customers and staff members. Pub co-manager Elliot Fern recently spoke about his experiences with the ghostly sightings within the pub. He said, "Lots of strange things have been happening. Everybody was telling me about all the different ghost activity that goes on. It's not something I believed in when I first arrived until lots of strange things started happening." The pub is famous for the tale of Dame Alice Lyle, who was accused of harbouring two dissenters after the 1685 Battle of Sedgemoor at her house and sentenced to decapitation, where she was held overnight at the Eclipse Inn. A scaffolding had been built outside the building, and on September the 2nd, 1685, she walked out of an upstairs window where she was decapitated with an axe. Elliot said she was 70 years old when that happened, incidentally. Elliot said there had been many sightings of Dame Lyle, also known as Lady Lyle, by customers, staff and paranormal investigation teams. He said, "I was by myself and I was about to lock up. I was having a cigarette outside and I could hear banging from inside the pub, which freaked me out. There was another time when I was on the top floor and from another room I could hear things being moved around me. It was really quite strange. The next day, along with my co-manager, the room was really heavy. The day felt really strange and there was a really heavy vibe in the pub. More recently, my chef came out of the kitchen and said, 'Do you need all these fridges and freezers open still?' I'm like, 'Steve, I've not been in the kitchen to open them.' I still can't prove it, but the truth's the truth." Elliot from Glossop, Derbyshire, has recently experienced a growing wave of paranormal activity within the bar. He said, Our top shelf gin lids keep popping off. It's happened more recently. Nobody believed me until I was on with another colleague and it happened to her. And then a customer stood there. It happened again, but this time the bottle lids landed at the back of the shelf rather than the floor. Located in the square, Winchester, the spooky pub has had many paranormal investigation teams from across the world visit. However, Elliot is not put off by the spooky events and has no plans to quit. He said, "It's all a bit strange. It's particularly freaky at night time when you're locking up." And there's a nice picture of the front of the eclipse, which looks very inviting.
New owners of old cookshop. A former cookshop, which closed down this month, will be taken over by another independent business in Winchester. Dingham's Cookshop in the square closed the doors of its Winchester branch on January the 15th. The shop opposite, the general store, have paid a deposit on the unit and hope to move a new business into it in the next few months. The current shop is a cafe and grocery store that sells wine, cheese and charcuterie. A part owner of the general store, who didn't want to be named, said that they don't know what the new business will be or what it will be called. However, the current premises at 30 and 31 the Square will stay as a shop and cafe, with the new shop as a separate business. Dingham's have been in its location in the square for almost 30 years, and they still have their main branch in Salisbury. Executive Director of Winchester Bid, Paul Spencer, said, "This is excellent news for Winchester, and while we are sad to see Dingham's leave the city, it's good to know that another local independent business is looking to take on this space. We look forward to finding out more about their plans for this commercial unit in the square." Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, "It's always good to see a local business thriving and expanding. The general store is a popular, innovative business that brought some extra spark to the square. The council and other partners do what they can to help, but ultimately a big part of how Winchester succeeds is because of the energy and innovation of the businesses that choose to base themselves here. It's a challenging time. Online retail was already putting a lot of businesses under pressure. COVID has added a whole level of pressure on top. Alongside Winchester Bid, we continue to support our changing high street via our grants, business rate relief, innovative ideas like Shop Appy, and our information support service going forward."
New novel from Romany author. An author who was born in Winchester is publishing a new novel influenced by her Romany upbringing. Diamond, by Jessie Keane, will be released on February the 3rd and is a historical crime fiction novel. One of the most successful Romany writers in the United Kingdom, Jessie was born in a traditional barrel-topped caravan parked on her parents' drive upon her grandmother's insistence that she be born Romany. From a family of bare-knuckle fighters, the Peaky Blinders references are strong, much of Jessie's focus on strong women and resilience in traditionally male-dominated environments in her books comes from her Romany heritage. Jessie is proud of it. She says, "Gypsies are strong, resilient and tough as old boots. It's an honour to be one of them." Her novel is set in the early 20th century London, where a desperate young girl changes her name and flees the confines of her brutal gangland family. It tells of the ups and downs of her adventurous life throughout the early 20th century until a happy ending.
Villagers' vote approves neighbourhood plan. A neighbourhood plan for Twyford has won support of most villagers. A referendum gave 83% approval to the Twyford neighbourhood plan, which the parish council has drawn up to control development. The public vote followed years of preparation and several drafts after environmental appraisal and independent examination. The referendum question was a take-it-or-leave-it choice for the residents. Did they want the plan to be used in determining planning applications in Twyford in the future or not? Voters turned out in good numbers and voted yes by a large majority, said the parish council. The plan contains the usual list of topics, but as a parish in the South Downs National Park, natural beauty comes top of the list for protection. Trifordians value their vibrant community, so that too has to be safeguarded and provided for in the plan. One of the great problems is the cost of housing, which means that people born and brought up in the village are priced out. So that objective is tackled by the plan, insisting on small houses with limits on floor areas and numbers of bedrooms. There are limits to the size of extensions too. Affordable housing has to be at 50% in line with the South Downs National Park. There is one new housing site proposed, and this is for 20 houses, and it is to be in the middle of the village next to the parish hall and doctor's surgery. More car parking is to be provided as an extension to the parish hall car park. The long-term problem of flooding from the Haseley Winterbourne seasonal stream is to be tackled too, with help from Hampshire County Council. The City Council and the landowner and parish council hopes from the National Park. The plan area is bordered by Coldham Common, Shawford, Compton and Winchester, and is designed to link to the City Council's own emerging local plan, which will guide and control development until the 2030s.
Sanctuary shows city at very best. Councillors have backed calls to make Winchester a city of sanctuary, welcoming refugees and asylum seekers. The City Council says the status highlights that the district is committed to welcoming those fleeing violence and persecution in their own countries, and recognises the potential contribution they can make. Four families from Afghanistan have recently been resettled in Winchester following the devastation of last summer. Councillors came together to agree a plan to support organisations, charities and community groups. They also want to challenge anti-refugee and anti-immigrant attitudes and support the Southampton and Winchester Visitors Group and Winchester City of Sanctuary in the promotion of the Together with Refugees campaign, calling for a fairer, kinder and more effective approach to supporting refugees in the United Kingdom. Councillor John Tippett Cooper, who proposed the motion at a council meeting, said that it was the Afghan crisis which highlighted the kindness and support of Winchester people. He said, "It was that crisis that showed me the very best of Winchester and this district. And for every venomous tweet made behind a cowardly anonymous Twitter account that sought to dehumanise refugees, there are 100 people in our district that donated clothes, money and skills to Afghan evacuees last summer. I hope this will be the first step in Winchester becoming a sanctuary for all people seeking asylum and refuge. This motion seeks to continue and shine a spotlight on the very hard work of wonderful community organisation. This motion is an expression of hope. It's an expression of our city and our district's kindness and our decency, our expression to do as much as we can to help some of the most vulnerable people." Councillor Tippett Cooper spoke of his parents-in-law who were asylum seekers.
This is a contrasting piece set in the past. A statue is to be unveiled. The unveiling of a unique statue in Winchester will take place next month. The bronze figure of Licorice will be formally revealed outside the Discovery Centre on Jewry Street on Thursday, February the 10th. Workmen have been preparing the plinth, on which the figures of Licorice and her son Asher will stand. Licorice was a Jewish businesswoman who worked in Winchester in the mid-13th century and was murdered by persons unknown in the city. Her sons were also persecuted. As reported in the Hampshire Chronicle, the local Jewish community has raised funds for the statue to stand as a monument to anti-Semitism. There has been a grant from the Arts Council, but otherwise most of the funding has come from private donations. A few years after Licorice was murdered, all the Jews in England were expelled in 1290. They only returned in the mid-17th century, invited back by Oliver Cromwell.
Control pledge. Hampshire Police dropped 93% of cases regarding allegations of coercive or controlling behaviour amid the first year of the pandemic, figures reveal. Data published by the Office for National Statistics shows Hampshire Constabulary recorded 477 allegations of coercive or controlling behaviour during 2020. This number was down from 489 the year prior, but different figures suggest most cases will never reach a courtroom. Of the 392 cases closed by the force in Hampshire during 2020, 93% were abandoned due to difficulties gathering evidence. Just 25 ended with a suspect being charged or summons to court. Southampton abuse prevention charity Yellow Door says these figures are disheartening. A spokesperson said, "It's difficult to know the full story behind these figures, but we do know it can be extremely difficult to prove coercive and controlling behaviours, particularly where there is no physical evidence, such as electronic communications. We believe the best solution lies in prevention." Hampshire Police's Chief Inspector Beth Peary said, "The force is committed to improving." She said, "There are often cases where we have not been able to capture enough evidence to charge someone. This is what we're trying to improve upon, as well as building trust with victims."
Mobile vaccines. Pharmacy2U, the United Kingdom's largest online pharmacy, is launching a new mobile unit to help with the rollout of the COVID-19 booster vaccinations, following the increase in cases and prevalence of the Omicron variant in the United Kingdom. The mobile unit will be available at Park and Ride South Car Park, M3 Junction 11, Hockley Link, Winchester, and it opened on January the 12th. Patients are advised to visit the Pharmacy2U website to book their vaccination appointment, as well as to view the most up-to-date clinic times. The COVID-19 booster jab is administered 3 months after you received your second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine and is currently available to all over 18s. Pharmacy2U has been operating COVID-19 vaccination sites across England since January 2021 and has so far vaccinated over 1 million people against the virus. To book your appointment for a booster vaccination and clinic timings, people are advised to visit the Pharmacy2U website. All vaccinations will be administered by a qualified healthcare professional, and patients will be required to return for the follow-up jab. Phil Day, superintendent pharmacist at Pharmacy2U, said, "This is a vitally important service for people across the country, ensuring the most vulnerable in our communities have access to the vaccination to protect themselves against COVID-19."
Council properties sitting empty. A council chief has been asked why a number of authority properties are sitting empty despite hundreds of residents seeking a home. Conservative Party leader on the City Council, Caroline Horrell, submitted the question, which was published at a recent council meeting. She asked why the homes were empty in light of hundreds of residents waiting for home on the Hampshire Home Choice Register. Councillor Horrell added, "Is it political dogma preventing them from becoming available, or sheer lack of focus on the affordable housing needs of the district?" Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, said that over the last 6 months, the total number of applicants on the housing registers had reduced by over 200. There are currently 37 properties subject to void works out of a housing stock of 5,174 properties, as well as 7 properties that are currently held as long-term voids, which are either subject to major works or being held for potential development. Councillor Lerney said most landlords are still grappling with persistent voids backlogs. The council continued to let its housing stock throughout the pandemic in order to meet local housing needs.
School PE lessons a priority. School children are facing an increase in the amount of PE lessons they receive each week amid ongoing health concerns. Some schools in Hampshire have put additional PE activity into their weekly timetables, with fears that the COVID-19 lockdowns have left children in a much different shape. At a Hampshire County Council Select Committee meeting last night, Councillor Leslie Minahan, Conservative representative for Leasland and Town, said schools need to push this as a priority. She said school children have spent the best part of 2 years sat staring at a computer screen all day. I really do hope schools are putting things in place to help these young people improve their physical health. Physical health goes hand in hand with mental health, so this is a really important issue to tackle. A health and well-being report published last year found that a third of Year 6 children and a quarter of Year R children, pupils, are considered either overweight or obese. 32% of children were considered physically inactive, with the report also noting that COVID-19 pandemic will have played a significant part in this.
Death of a curator. Christopher Wardman Bradbury was born on October the 15th, 1944, and died on January the 12th, 1922. A talented fine artist and illustrator, Christopher had two distinct careers. Studying in Manchester and Hornsey quickly led to a successful career in both painting and illustration. His style paid homage to the Italian Renaissance and the elegant curves of Art Nouveau, with a hint of the psychedelic, a perfect mix for the 1960s. His illustrations appeared regularly in the Sunday Times and other supplements and graced many adult and children's books. But his best-known work is his iconic poster for the Natural History Museum at South Kensington, which was commissioned by London Transport in 1969. Its subject is the Natural History Museum, and the poster is a tour de force of form and colour, in which fragments of fossils, animals, minerals, Gothic architecture, and an ichthyosaur skeleton come together in a strong and cohesive image, representing the museum's rich collection. A signed copy is held in the V&A collections, and the poster is still available to buy from the London Transport Museum. In 1978, Christopher changed career, joining Winchester City Museum as keeper of art and exhibitions, acquiring works for the museum and commissioning constantly changing art exhibitions for the city's Guildhall Gallery. With a lifelong love of arms and armour, he also took responsibility for the museum's collection, which he displayed in the city's Westgate. After retirement, he moved to Herefordshire with his partner Christine and beloved Labrador Titus, taking on a Georgian house in need of restoration, and for 3 years the voluntary curatorship of Leominster Museum. As an ardent lover of history, those who knew Christopher would agree with his belief that he was born in the wrong century. In his later years, able to devote himself fully to his eclectic and sometimes eccentric collection of art, antiques and quirky artefacts of all sorts, he was able to become a true gentleman antiquary. He died unexpectedly at home in his library, where he loved to be, and the article is accompanied by a photo of him.
More likely to get COVID. Young adults are the ones most likely to contract COVID-19 in Hampshire, according to new statistics. A report from Hampshire County Council shows that the 20 to 24-year-old age bracket is the one with the highest number of COVID-19 cases. It comes as health experts voice concerns about the high transmissibility of the Omicron variant. The report is being put to the County Council's Health and Social Care Select Committee next week. Simon Bryant, Director of Public Health, said, "Overall, case rates are high in Hampshire's districts, suggesting sustained and rising community transmission. We now have a largely vaccinated but partially boosted population, so need to encourage uptake among unprotected people and urge COVID-19 booster uptake, if eligible, to top up immunity. The critical message, while rates are high and with a new variant in circulation, is that the community gets fully vaccinated and, if eligible, boosted, and that face coverings, good ventilation, hand and cough hygiene and social distancing measures are complied with to control the spread of infection." Statistics published by the County Council in December had the 5 to 9 year old and 10 to 14 year old age brackets with the highest rate of cases. On September the 1st, these figures stood at 590 and 330, respectively. These rates, as with infant cases, have dropped significantly, to Mr. Bryant's relief. He said, reassuringly, rates in younger children aged 6 to 4 years, aged 0 to 4 years, are relatively lower for now, at 39.8 per 100,000 of the population. However, we have to protect our unvaccinated children and partly vaccinated children, including vulnerable communities, by promoting vaccination and urgent rollout of the COVID-19 booster campaign, and highlight the importance of taking reasonable care to keep safe, regularly test and contact trace in line with national guidance.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 28th of January 2022. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation team. And many thanks to today's readers. Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. Mm-hmm. When you're finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet. And please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.